Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Kay Puttock, together with my co-host, Roxanne Thompson, who's new to Local Talk but not new to KHOI. I want to say a special welcome to you, Roxanne.
Hello, Kay, and hello to you, the listener. Thanks for the welcome, and it's my pleasure to be part of your Local Talk show today.
I'm so glad you could be with us today, Roxanne, because you have a special expertise, or at least more expertise than I have, on one of our subjects today, which is an exploration of foster parenting. We're focusing on foster parenting because May is National Foster Care Month. And May is also National Travel and Tourism Month. And so we're also concentrating on travel and tourism for the first part of our show.
Yes, so let's move right into welcoming our first visitor today, Allison Walter of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Hello, Allison, and welcome to Local Talk.
Good morning.
Well, according to livability.com, Ames is one of the best 100 places to live in the United States and the best college town in America, I hear.
You know, it's amazing the number of mentions we're getting in all kinds of lists these days. And it is. It's because Ames is a great place to live. And as a resident of Ames, we hope that you will share what's great about Ames with your friends and family this summer.
Yes, because I believe that's one of the main sources of tourism in Ames is people visiting their families in Ames.
It is a big part. We have a number of people that attend conferences and events in Ames. But when you think about it, you are a tour guide for all of those friends and family that come to visit. And we want you to think about that and focus on all the great things there are to do in Ames when you have people in town.
Yeah, and we were just saying before the show started, this was a very busy weekend in Ames.
It was.
Good sort of snippet of the good things that there are.
Exactly. Both of the farmers markets were open this weekend. The Main Street Market had an actual ribbon cutting. It was their first Saturday. We had the Mid-Iowa Wood Carvers had their event at Ryman Gardens. And then we had the Healthiest Streets Initiative event on Sunday. So there were lots of things to do and get out and have great time with your friends and family.
Yeah, if you've never been to a farmer's market, you wouldn't have much idea of how much fun they are.
Well, the Main Street Farmer's Market in particular has a lot of activities other than just the vendors' food for sale, but they'll have musicians playing, they'll have kids' activities, so you really can make a day of it or a morning of it because it's open from 8 to noon and enjoy spending some time with your family.
Yes, and Ryman Gardens, of course, is a big attraction in Ames.
Yes.
And there's always things going on there apart from the beauty of the place itself and the butterflies.
Yes.
And so on.
And this year they have a really unique exhibit that'll be going on. They kicked that off not this past weekend, but about a week ago with intriguing tree houses. And they have life-size tree houses down on the ground, not up in the trees, but you can actually go in and walk through them. And they're made by local artists and architects. And, you know, with the cable television channels, there's a couple of different treehouse shows these days. And so they kind of picked up on that trend.
Uh-huh.
And you can actually enjoy that as well as their other seasonal exhibits as well as the beautiful gardens.
Yes, I remember I happened to be in Ryman Gardens when there was a wedding going on.
Yes.
And when I saw that, I thought, wow, I can't maybe have a wedding in Ames, but I can have a wedding anniversary celebration.
There
I started wanting to have a party there because it's such
wonderful.
A lovely place.
Yeah.
Well, why do you think Ames comes out number one in college towns?
Well, I think that we have a wonderful relationship with the university and the community, and it's something that we've actually hosted the International Town and Gown Association mm-hmm. a few years back for a conference because we have such a good working relationship with the university and the city, and that makes for great opportunities for people to do things and enjoy the amenities of the university. In fact, I was just showing a group yesterday. We had a site visit where we brought them in to think about bringing their conference to Ames. And we commented about the fact that we don't have a convention center, but we have the Iowa State University facility. facilities, the Iowa State Center, and what a great opportunity and all the things that Ames has as a community because of the influence of the university.
Right.
So we bring a lot of educational conferences to Ames due to that relationship that we have with the university, and they can use the university facilities. We also bring a lot of youth events, such as the Special Olympics Iowa, the Odyssey of the Mind event, which is, we actually hold the world finals, and we have people from multiple countries coming, and they're young people.
What are the dates for that?
That will be next year in 2016, and it's always the week right around Memorial Day. And we bring 15,000 people to the community with that event. So having the facilities to bring groups like that, and the attractions, things for them to do when they're here outside of their convention or competition is wonderful.
Yeah, but I was wondering, most universities have the things you've mentioned, but the thing about Ames is it's got this beautiful university, and as you mentioned, all the facilities, but it's still got the charm of a small town.
Right. So, exactly.
And that's one of the big attractions,
right,
I think.
Yeah. If you didn't have the 35,000 students, you know, we only have about 25,000 residents. And so that isn't a big city without the students. For having that few permanent residents, we have a lot of amenities.
Yes, because of the university, it's a very creative atmosphere.
It is. Right.
With the music and the plays and
yes.
so on.
Yes, we have a number of performing organizations, whether it's choruses and choirs or Actors Theater, ISU Theater, as well as the Broadway-type shows that Iowa State Center brings in. Mm-hmm. So when you have people coming, you know, thinking about those kinds of things that you can take them
now,
to.
Now, it's funny you mentioned that because when you live somewhere all the time, you tend to sort of take things for granted and think, oh, I can see it anytime. But when you have friends or family coming, you start looking out for the things that they can do.
Exactly.
And as you've said, I think, Ames residents should be the tour guides. We are the tour guides. Because we're taking our friends and families to all these different events and making them aware of the beautiful things that are in Ames.
And we have a number of resources for local community members when they're looking to do that. You can contact our office and we can help you with welcome bags for your group. If you're having a reunion, a family reunion, a class reunion, or a wedding, and you've got a number of out-of-town people, you might want, you know, 15 or 20 welcome bags. We can provide those for you. We can help you with our event calendar that's online at our website, visitames.com, so that you can look as you're planning what things are happening that weekend or that week that you're going to have people in town and help plan accordingly. And I'm actually working with a Ames High 50-year class reunion this summer. And we actually have registration services. So they're using our registration services and we've helped them with a website. And then we've helped them with what kinds of things are there to do. So they'll be spending some time downtown on Main Street and reminiscing what it was like then. They'll be using the library and bringing in the Historical Society for a presentation on the history of Ames. And they're touring City Hall because that was the high school when they were in school. As well, I think their class attended both the old high school and the new high school, so they're having a tour of both places. And then we also help them with organizing hotel rooms, and they'll be having a buffet at Sheman for their Saturday night dinner. So we can help facilitate some of those things for anyone who's interested with those kinds of services.
Yes, and I'd like to underline that website, visitames.com, because I was looking at that before the show, and it very helpful.
It has a lot of resources, and it is a wonderful resource for community members as well as visitors.
Right. And talking of you being so helpful, the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, you were very helpful to us when we had our grassroots radio conference last summer.
Right, yes.
And that was wonderful because there was an event, I forget what it was, wine tasting or brew tasting or something.
Oh, right, the Foodies and Brew event.
That's it,
yes.
Right in the street outside.
Yes. Well,
and I think a lot of the people thought we'd organized that. In fact, we had nothing really to do with that. That was Ames organizing.
Well, and that's the thing about that calendar, too, is if as you're looking, you can look at the kinds of things that are going on and plan plan accordingly. For you, mm-hmm. it was a great opportunity to share with your attendees our community. Mm-hmm. But that might not have been a good fit. So, you know, by looking at right. that calendar, you could choose a weekend that where there are things going on, or maybe there aren't things
right.
going on.
Right.
So,
what they want.
And a lot of community organizations use us for that resource as their planning actors and when they're looking at their dates for their shows, you know, so that they don't conflict with other things that are going in the, on in the community. We have over 300 members of our organization.
Wow.
And a benefit of their membership is to be able to list those things for public awareness
mm-hmm.
and also for planning purposes. So.
Right. And one thing we haven't mentioned is the beautiful natural resources we've got here. The parks, the walking trails, the
yes.
biking trails.
Yes.
And all those things.
And that's such a important part of people's lives today, you know, mm-hmm. getting out in nature. So we've got the Ada Hayden. You know, the other thing that was going on that I didn't even mention this past weekend, there were two runs. One that happened up at Ada Hayden Park. The Iowa Able Foundation had their run and activities. And so Saturday morning, there were lots of people up at Ada Hayden. They had biking and they're actually focused on disabilities. So they actually had a wheelchair race.
Great.
You could participate in your wheelchair as well as running or walking or biking. And then we also had the Kids Run for Kids event at Brookside Park. And they were focusing with the Ames Benevolent Association and the Morning Rotary Club on raising funds for the Boys and Girls Club and also for Rotary's efforts to end polio. And they had a 1K, 2K, 4K, 5K, 10K, and they were focusing on children. So children were mm-hmm. running in that event. So, you know, it doesn't matter what day of the week or what weekend you choose, there's always lots to do in Ames. And that's what we want you to think about. Ames has about 459,000 visitors every year that stay in a hotel overnight.
Wow.
And we can track those numbers through the hotel motel tax. And those visitors alone spent over $99 million in direct
wow.
spending in our community last year. But that doesn't even count the friends and family that come and stay
right,
in your
right,
home
right.
and spend money. So
right.
this tourism is a major economic engine for our community.
Right. And if you do have friends and family visiting, be sure to look at visitames.com if you haven't already for helpful suggestions. Now, before you go, Alison, I'd like to ask you, what are some of your favorite places to take guests when you have them?
Oops. Well, I definitely think Ryman Gardens is wonderful.
Right.
I mean, you can go there any day of the week and it's always beautiful. Another place that I love is the Iowa Arboretum just outside
right.
of town.
Wonderful.
They have
yes.
beautiful, and they have a wonderful little gift shop.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of, I'm a dog lover, so I have to mention this. There's all sorts of lovely trails, woodland
yes.
trails where you can take your dog to the Arboretum.
Yes.
In fact, they have an event usually every year
for
four
dogs.
Dogs.
Yes, they do.
And
which
their
is
owners.
Wonderful. And I love Ada Hayden Park too, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. to be able to walk
right.
and enjoy. And you can get up into the woodland trails, not just the paved trail. But it's always beautiful
right.
on the water.
Yeah, and if you've got young people visiting, well, they don't have to be young, but young people like it. The golf, we've got disc golf, a
yes.
beautiful disc golf course.
Yes, we do.
Yes, there's two in Ames, a community one and a university one. So, and you can't forget Furman Aquatic Center. You know, that's a
oh,
fabulous
right,
place.
Right.
It's
right.
not
Lazy
quite warm
River
enough for that
right.
yet.
Oh, yes,
but
yes.
Once summer hits, definitely.
Well, thank you very much, Alison Water. We've been talking to Alison Water of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and surrounding areas. Our program today is on milestones in the month of May, and one of these milestones is May is National Travel and Tourism Month. So with travel and tourism in mind, we've just been talking to Alison Water of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau and hearing how we, the residents of Ames, can be the best tour guides for our wonderful town. Thank you again, Alison.
Thank you.
Another milestone this month is that May is the National Foster Care Month. And that's one reason I'm especially delighted to have you, Roxanne, as my co-host today. It's thanks to your contacts with the foster parenting world that we've been able to line up some exciting interviews with experts on the subject of foster parenting, including interviews with children and youth who have been or still are in foster homes. And to get us started, here are a few brief introductions from three of the young people themselves.
When I was two, I was put into foster care
because my parents had done drugs. And so when I was 2, I went into my first foster home, but there were some ups and downs. Like, if you're not really sure and you're a kid and you don't really know the people, you get kind of afraid and you start acting like crazy, I guess I can say.
I was removed from the home when I was 8 years old. I was with my biological mother living in North Carolina. She was doing drugs, so I was removed and put with a man who was believed to be my biological father and my stepmother. I was 13 and my dad got shot for dealing drugs and doing other things, so we were removed from the home again, and me and my 3 other siblings were put into a relative placement, and then they couldn't handle us, so we went to live with another relative.
When we were younger, our birth mom, she had an issue with men. She couldn't live without men, and our house was infested with cockroaches. And when I was younger, my birth dad had sexually abused me and 3 of my older sisters and a friend of ours, and which caused us to go into the system.
Roxanne, I believe you were already acquainted with some of those children because of your work in this area. Would you like to tell us briefly about your involvement?
Sure, Kay. I work with Youth and Shelter Services Achieving Maximum Potential, or AMP program. We seek to unleash the full potential for growth among foster and adoptive youth in Iowa. It's a statewide program. We offer leadership opportunities, service learning projects, speaking opportunities, and educational and vocational assistance to the youth we serve. We also provide life skills training that we all need to become self-sufficient, independent adults. And this is how I know all of these wonderful youth, through their participation in our AMP program.
Thanks, Roxanne. And now let's move on to the recorded interview that you and I had with an expert in this field, Bambi Schrader, who's the recruitment supervisor for Iowa KidsNet, an organization that recruits, trains, licenses, and supports foster and adoptive families. Now, we're very happy to speak with Bambi this morning because May is National Foster Parents Month. So this is very opportune and timely. Welcome, Bambi.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And you're here in a sort of double capacity as an expert on foster parenting. You're a recruitment supervisor for Iowa KidsNet, and you've also been a foster parent yourself.
That's true. I've been in the field of foster care for about 20 years. 12 of that, we were licensed foster parents, and through the foster care system, we were able to adopt our daughter.
Now, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about, the sort of overlap between fostering and adoption. We're going to focus mostly on foster parenting today, but sometimes foster parents do adopt children, and sometimes they don't. And I'd like to talk about that, if you would.
Right. The goal of foster care is always to get the children back with birth family, whether that's their mom or dad, a grandma and grandpa, an aunt or uncle, or an older sibling. But unfortunately, some of our children are not able to be reunified with birth family because of circumstances. And so then it is looked at the foster family to possibly be the adoptive family for this child, because who better that knows this child and their behaviors and their challenges than the person who's fostering for the last 6 to 12 months.
So one of the reasons then that children are not adopted is simply that they're not available for adoption.
That's true. Right. A lot of our children who are put in foster care, of course, like I said, the goal is always to get them back with their birth families. And so we do that in a variety of different ways, work with the birth family. Many of our children are in foster care. It's because of the actions of the birth parents, drugs, alcohol, mental health issues, unsanitary living conditions. So we need to get in and work with the birth families. And if at all possible, we're going to reunite these children with their birth family members. So the foster family is a temporary care of the child.
And in your case, and in similar cases, the child became available for adoption after a while, or how did that work?
In our case, our daughter, it was before some laws had been changed in the foster care system. And at that point, children actually stayed in foster care quite a few years. And in our daughter's case, she was in the foster care system for 4.5 years. When she came to live with us, she was 5 years old. We were her 7th foster home. It was kind of a revolving door type situation where birth mom would have a paramour or a partner, and then, you know, something would happen. So they'd remove the kids, and then she'd get rid of that person and they'd put the kids back in. And it just was a bad cycle. By the time we had Anna come and live with us, termination of parental rights had already happened and we were able to adopt her. So in that situation, there was no birth family member that could take her or her 2 siblings who were adopted by 2 other families. And so all those rights had been exhausted, or all those options. So we were then been able to foster her, you have to have a foster child in your home a minimum of 180 days before you can file for the purpose of adoption. With foster children, of course, it's much longer than that usually because we have to get through the foster care system and then the termination of parental rights and appeals and then on to adoption. But with her, we were able to finalize. She was in our home about a year before we were able to finalize the adoption. So we do encourage families to do both foster care and adoption if they're going to go through the licensing process because some may never adopt, but they just use their foster care side of it. Some may only adopt and not use their foster care side. But the reality is if we get somebody who only has a foster care license and not the adoption approval, 9 times out of 10, that family will come back to us and say, you know what? Our foster child can't be reunited. Now we want to adopt. So now we got to add that.
Right.
So it's best to do a dual license and then have both options available.
Right. Even if you don't use the adoption.
Absolutely.
Now your child, tell me her name again.
Her name is Anna. And we adopted her when she was 5 and now she's 20. So it was a very rewarding experience, but it also came with challenges. And
sure.
There are challenges raising any child, but when you add the baggage and the trauma that foster children have gone through, you usually are going to have some extra things that you have to deal with as a parent of an adopted child.
Right. And she was relatively young, 5 years old. But as you say, she had baggage, which you were able, obviously, to work through.
Right.
But sometimes it's much more difficult. The children are older. And there's all sorts of difficulties. Could you talk a little bit about the need for foster parenting and at what ages the need is greatest?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
You know, the need across the state is great. I was telling Roxanne earlier that the reality is as fast as we are recruiting and licensing new families, we are losing them on the other end because primarily for the purpose of adoption. A lot of times families adopt and their nest is full or because the behaviors the child have, they don't feel like they should take on any more children, which is a good choice. So they're withdrawing their license for the purpose of adoption. We have other families that are burning out. We have some families that are moving or life changes themselves, so they can't offer services anymore. So we really do have a great need. Right now, there's about 4,000 children in the foster care system and only about 2,300 foster homes. So that means children are multiples in different homes. They're sitting in shelters way longer than they should. They're in unsafe environments, maybe still in the birth home or with a relative that can manage them for a short period of time but can't keep them long term. So we have such a great need. I would have said 5 years ago, or even as little as 3 years ago, the greatest need we had in our state was for teens, which is still a high need. But I will tell you, within the last couple of years, we have seen a need for 0 to 5 and 5 to 8 and 8 to 12 become as much as the for teens, and especially for families who would consider a sibling group, because we rarely get a single child unless it is a teen in foster care. Those younger children are coming in groups of 2, 3, 7. And the last thing we want to do is split those sibling groups when they're already losing their families, their parents and their house and their dog and their church and their school. We don't want to separate them from their siblings. So I know a couple of months ago, my staff had trouble finding a home for a 1 and a 3-year-old. Literally, we could not. We had no openings available for that young of a group, and that just wasn't heard of as little as 3 years ago. So I would say the greatest need is sibling groups, those that'll take teenagers, and those will take children with our a little bit difficult behaviors.
Right. And there are apparently a lot of difficult behaviors.
Yeah, there are. Again, I would say parenting in general is difficult.
Right.
But when you come from a home where there's been abuse, neglect, substance abuse, that just puts a whole bunch of trauma and grief and baggage on a child that unfortunately our children don't have good communication skills. They can't come up and say, I'm mad about this or I don't like that. It comes out in their behaviors. And so we really do a very good job of training foster and adoptive parents through what's called PSMAP. It's a 30-hour training families have to go through to really look at what's behind those behaviors. We got to stop the behavior, but it's not they're doing it because they don't like you or they're mad. They're doing it because something is, they're fearful, they're angry, they're sad. So we've got to get out what's behind it to change the behavior on a long-term basis.
Are there support services for families?
Absolutely. And again, that's a big change. We realized a long time ago that just putting a child in a home and saying, okay, see you in 6 months was not the best for anyone, the foster family, the child, the birth family, or our system. So we really have put into place now supports for the family. It can be on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis, whatever the family needs. Iowa KISNET has a support worker that's assigned to every licensed foster family. And then even after adoption, we have services now, which are called post-adoption services. Because like in our case, we adopted our daughter at 5 years old. She didn't have any mental health issues at that point or serious behavior problems. At 14, when she started having the mental health issues, we would have just been out there by ourselves because you're not involved with the system anymore and you kind of still have your network. But we relied on post-adoption services, a worker that then helped us and guided us and got us into services and really was our person to rely on when we were kind of questioning what we should do and where we should go from there.
And that's a relatively new service, isn't it, the post-adoption?
Yeah, it's about 5 years old now, and I think it was one of those slow-starting programs, but I'll tell you, it's really taken off, and people utilize it every day now.
When I remember reading an article, we have lots of disrupted adoptions because of exactly what Bambi's talked about, the children's high needs and then the lack of support. So I'm glad to hear that the service for the support for the youth and the family is there.
Absolutely. Yeah. It used to be that families would have to voluntarily push their child back into foster care to receive any services. And now we have the post-adoption services, so that's not necessarily the case or the issue. They can get the services they need without going down that route.
And aren't foster parents expected to receive ongoing training after their initial licensing training? Isn't that so many hours per year?
Yes, yes. As I mentioned, the 30-hour training is just the start. We touch on a lot of subjects, but there's a lot more training out there. And each year, foster families are required to get 6 hours of continuing education. And we really want to look at where are their areas of need. So if they're taking children that have reactive attachment disorder, let's get them into some training about that. If they have managing behaviors, let's get them into training about that. If they have teenagers. There's lots of good trainings out there about network, social networking and school issues and anything that have to pertain with teenagers. So we really look at a training plan for foster parents that help them with the needs of the children that they've identified that they'll take into their home.
Yeah, well, that reminds me of something else I wanted to bring up, and that is some of the myths that are perhaps associated. Now, you've described a pretty intensive training for adoptive and foster parents, whereas ordinary birth parents don't necessarily have any training at all. One of the myths is that foster parents do it just for the money. And another, we do occasionally see cases in the newspaper and so on of foster parents abusing or neglecting children. I'd like you just to address that, if you would.
Sure, absolutely. I think a lot of myths are out there because people just don't know. First and foremost, with foster and adoptive families through the Iowa Department of Human Services, you can be married or single, you can be widowed or divorced, you can own your own home or you can be renting, you have children of your own or you don't, you can be a same-sex family. A lot of people qualify. There's no age requirement, although they would like you to be within 40 years of the child that you're adopting. But that exception is made, especially for grandparents that might be adopting their grandchildren. You know, so a lot of times, like I said, people have called for international or private and they've been turned down for one of those criteria and they would qualify probably through the Department of Human Services. You are right. People, if they're looking at this as a job, it certainly isn't one I'd want to do for the small amount of pay you're going to get per day. There is a foster care stipend that families receive, and it's per child per month, and it's about 65% of what it costs that they figure today to raise a child. So you are going to have some still out-of-pocket expenses. We do assess financial stability of families as we're going through the licensing process, but again, that's to take care of your own current family, not the needs of a foster child, because that's going to be unique to the child and the stipend's going to help with that. Another couple other myths would be that you just get any child. And that's just not true. We really go through quite an assessment with a family to identify their strengths and their areas of need. And then we help them match that with what child they would be able to take. So a family could say to us, we want 0 to 5. We only want girls. We'll be able to take these behaviors, but we don't feel we can take these behaviors. And then when we assess that, if we agree with that, then that'll go into our Iowa KisNet database system that will then, once a child comes in with the needs, we would match them and then call that family. And then again, they would still have the right to say yes or no. And you're right. Unfortunately, we do have situations that something has happened in a foster home where abuse has occurred. I'm not going to say that that's never happened. But again, I think that the times that that has occurred versus the times where the challenges have been met by a foster family and successful are just nil to the opposite. So unfortunately, if the word foster parent is behind a person's name in the media, it gives a lot of attention, because we are professional parents. By going through the training, you're saying that we've taken training and we should know to do better. But unfortunately, human nature takes over sometimes and things like that happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, particularly if they've got difficult behaviors, as you said. Now, you mentioned reactive attachment disorder. Mm-hmm. What exactly is that?
Reactive attachment disorder, I personally believe about every child in foster care has a little bit of it, some from very, very slight to some that are very significant. When you've been taken away from your family sometimes multiple times, you develop kind of a boundary or a wall that keeps you from attaching to others because it's so fearful for you to get close and then get hurt. So what often happens, and we talk about this a lot in PS MAP, is that children will come into a home and they love everybody. They'll come in, they'll call foster parents mom and dad right away. They have kind of this persona where they just follow every rule and they do everything. And then as they start to get close, you see this child kind of do a 180 and they start to pull back and they start to fight the rules. They stop calling you mom and dad. They do this kind of stuff. And at that point, foster parents need to realize that it isn't that the child doesn't like them. It's that the child is getting close to them and it's scary.
Yeah.
And so they want to pull back and they want to test. And what happens a lot of times is I'll get a call from a family and they'll say, what happened to Johnny or what happened to Sally? Because they were this good. And I'll say, you know what? You're doing exactly what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Keep doing it. Keep going, because the minute you pull back, you've just lived up to that child's expectation that you don't want them either. So you have to get through that. And sometimes that testing can go on for quite a long time of a child.
Like years?
Oh, yeah. They say on a national average, it takes a child about 7 years to attach to a family after they've been traumatized and taken out of a home. So we tell people just to keep working at it. I'll give you an example. Our daughter had lived with us for about 4 years. And I remember I said we were her seventh foster home. So she had had
she'd be nine
at age five.
Yeah. So she had attached to several other people before she came to us and then was removed from those people. And she was about nine and we had been camping with some friends and we got home. We were unpacking and Anna, you know, just out of the blue, she says, you know, when I have to leave, I'd like to go live with so-and-so. And first of all, it kind of made me mad because I'm thinking, what did I do wrong that she's even thinking she has to leave even after 5 years of living with us? So we just had to keep, you know, staying with her. And I said, you know what, honey, good, bad, or anything, you're not leaving us. You're staying with us. Anna's 20 now. She lives in Colorado. She's finding her own way, not necessarily making some of the decisions that we would like, but you know, most kids do that.
Right.
But I know she's attached to us because she still keeps us up on everything she's doing. Again, good or bad, she still is part of our family. So she is attached to us now, and we're very thankful for that.
Now that's very interesting though. You'd been camping. Was it to do with the packing up and moving around, you think?
I believe so, yeah, because a lot of times foster and adoptive children are not, they have a lot of junk, but they're not attached to it because they've lost their stuff so often. So I think that was it. I think it was the trigger of the packing.
And these people that she mentioned that she wanted to go, they hadn't been on the camping trip with you or something.
Yeah, they had been. But again, it was superficial. That attachment to them was superficial. And that's what happens when foster children come into a home. They have a lot of superficial attachments because those are easy to break.
Right. And I remember when we first started thinking that children needed permanency, probably 10, 15 years ago, kids would languish, is the word they use, in foster care for till they turned 18. And then we started realizing that this permanency, they need to be in a permanent family, whether it's an adoptive family, an adoptive foster parent, a birth family, a sibling, an aunt, an uncle. The permanency is huge.
And to know that it's permanent.
Right. And see, that's why that was one of the examples is in foster homes, they may have unrelated children, two or three kids, and one of them acts up and they go. So I flashed on, or maybe I read, you know, how would it be to a foster child that's acting just as good as they can, but then to see another child have to leave and go to bed at night thinking, oh my gosh, I hope I don't have to leave tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always
mm-hmm.
kind of on pins and needles, and when they see other kids leave the family.
Right, right.
Mm.
Very
yeah.
difficult.
Well, and again, I think that's why we developed or where we implemented the PS MAP training system.
What does PS stand for?
PS stands for Permanency and Safety Model Approach to Professional Parenting. And so again, it really is that we want a one-stop shop for these kids. We want them to come into a foster home after being matched very carefully, that they stay in that foster home until they can be reunited with birth family, or they can go on to the purpose of adoption, whether that be by this foster family or someone else. We don't want the revolving door anymore. That just damages these kids. I always visualize reactive attachment as a wall. And every time we move this child, you've added one more brick to that wall to the point where it's so high. They, as Roxanne was saying, as adults, they don't attach to the significant people in their lives, including their own children, sometimes when they have them.
Right.
So then we have a revolving door of their children being in foster care again.
And Bambi, if a family is not sure that they want to be a foster parent 24/7, 365, are there other opportunities for them?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that. Yes. There are four different types of foster care that families can do. And so what we did for the 12 years that we were licensed, we did what was called respite care, meaning that we gave another licensed foster family a break for a weekend, a week, a day. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's kind of like being a surrogate aunt or uncle or grandma and grandpa. So, you know, when the kids are coming, you know, when the kids are leaving. They can do short-term care, which is 4 months or less. Good example of that might be unsanitary living conditions. We pull the child out, we go in, we help the family or help them relocate. Child goes back home in 4 months. Long-term care can be anything more than 4 months. Children at the age of 14 get to decide if they want to be adopted. And then urgent care would be the other one. And that one is where we have a child at a hospital, at the police station, somewhere where we have to identify a home within 2 hours, and that child's coming pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So again, that one's a little bit more difficult for families, especially if there's not a stay-at-home parent.
But then that could be short term, right?
Absolutely. That will all last up to 30 days. And then the family would, if the child's going to stay in care, the family would be given the option to keep that child longer term, or they would be moved to a different longer term home.
Bambi, I would like to ask, is there anything that our community can do to reach out and support the foster parents that we live among?
Absolutely. If fostering isn't for you, you can get a hold of Youth and Shelter Services, and you could offer to support foster and adoptive families either by volunteering at events. Like, we have an appreciation event in June in Webster City for foster and adoptive parents, where we're going to have a picnic and a pool party and things like that. So maybe that's something you want to either help volunteer at, or you want to donate some money to help with the funds to put that thing on. There's just lots of opportunities and ways that you can help with it. Support a local foster family. Our foster families are getting new kids every day, and maybe they are set up for 5 to 8 year olds, but they're getting called. They need to take a baby. Do they have a crib? Do they have a car seat? Do they have the clothes? There's a variety of ways to support the families, and so just step up and ask.
Right. We've been talking to Bambi Schrader, who's the recruitment supervisor of Iowa KidsNet, a foster and adoptive agency. Thank you very much, Bambi.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Because May is National Foster Care Month, we've been focusing on this topic, which also includes the need for foster families. We've just heard an interview with Bambi Schrader, a YSS employee who's the recruitment supervisor for Iowa KidsNet, an organization that licenses, trains, and supports foster families. We'll be hearing some last words from Bambi at the end of the program today, but right now, let's hear from Haley, a young person who's lived in foster care. Together with Haley, you'll hear from Terry Bailey, who's a foster parent and another adult expert in this field.
We have several foster children in the studio today to talk to us about their experiences. And also, I have Terry Bailey, who's a foster parent and the coordinator of the AMP program, which is an organization within YSS, Youth and Shelter Services, for children in foster care. AMP stands for Achieving Maximum Potential. And right now, I have with me Terry Bailey herself and Haley. Hello to both of you. And we'll start with Terry about what you do for foster parents and so on, perhaps your own experience as a foster parent.
I've been a foster parent for 28 years. I tend to take teenagers. That's my age group. That's what I like. And I tend to take the teens who are having a really tough time. So it's kind of their last chance for a family before group care, mm-hmm. or people just coming right out of group care and going back into their regular society.
And have you had good experiences with that?
Yeah, I have. It's really addicting to see them be successful. I have youth that have mental health issues, learning disabilities in school, and a lot of youth just need that stable family in order to move forward with their life.
Okay. And let's talk to Haley a little bit now. Haley was in foster care, but she's now been adopted. Hello, Haley.
Hi.
Why don't you tell us how old you are, first of all?
I'm 12.
Okay. Well, welcome. Thanks so much for coming today. Would you like to tell us about your experience of foster care?
Yes. When I was 2, I was put into foster care because my parents had done drugs. And so when I was 2, I went into my first foster home, and I can say that I was actually pretty glad to be somewhere that's safe, and I was so young, I didn't know what was happening, but there were some ups and downs. Like, if you're not really sure and you're a kid and you don't really know the people, you get kind of afraid and you start acting like crazy, I guess I can say. And then in my first foster home, they didn't treat me right, so I got moved at least 7 different times.
Wow.
Yeah, from foster home to foster home until I was adopted in my first adoptive home. And then, like I said, I got all loopsy, and then I was almost sent back into the system. But then I was adopted again by my forever family with my mom, Ruth, and my dad, Bill, and my 27 siblings.
Wow!
Yeah.
This is a really big family.
Yeah. I've had a pretty good time being adopted.
Now, how long has it been that you've been adopted?
I've been adopted for 5 years now.
Okay, so.
Yeah, but I'm actually really glad that I went into foster care in the first place, or else I might have not become who I am today. I might have still been with really bad people. Mm-hmm. Although I went through tough times in foster care, it still turned out good in the end, and I encourage people to go and become foster parents because it's a pretty neat thing to do.
What would you say, either of you, either Haley or Terry, up to a family considering being licensed to provide foster care?
I would say do it, because you can change a kid's life forever. You can be the forever family, and you might not know how good that feels to someone until you do it. And you could be the forever family and make their life a whole lot better.
Yeah, I would say it's an experience like no other. Those people who do foster care, we are very kindred spirits, and it helps you appreciate the family that you have and offer your family to other youth. It just complements your family. My birth children seemed to appreciate their family more once we started doing foster care. And it's a great experience to have someone say to you, I had a therapist say to me, so what's it like to save the life of a child? Mm-hmm. And that's just, it's life-changing.
Besides a home, what do you think are the most important things that a foster family can provide for a youth? Let's start with Haley first.
I think it's not about like the home or the food. It's more of the love that they give you and the attention. Mm-hmm. Just how much they pay attention to you and how much they want to know about you. And especially like me, I didn't like meeting new people. And most of my foster parents, they were open and they tried to talk to me and they try to love me, but I wouldn't let them. But
can you say why that was?
Because I never had trust when I was little, because I have an older sister, an older brother, and two little sisters, and they're twins. And I was the mom of my little sisters because my mom was never home, and I never had anyone for me to depend on. I was always independent. And I didn't know how to trust anyone after I lost my mom. And I didn't know how to react to anything. I was just new to the whole trusting thing, but I finally grew trust over time.
Great. And you mentioned that foster kids, including you, would sometimes act crazy. What would you say to the parents when the kid is acting crazy like that?
I would say what my mom always says, just deal with it. It's part of life. Like Terry said, most parents start off with teenagers because they are more of a challenge, I would say, but not really. And you can understand them more and get to know them more and their feelings. And I'm not saying don't start with babies, but like Terry and my mom don't like babies because they are like really noisy and they can't take care of themselves. And that's the thing, like, when you...
Well, a lot of people want babies anyway.
Well, so yes.
You need more parents for teenagers, yes.
And it's just like the babies. Most parents, well, some at least, think that some of the teenagers are just like babies and they don't know how to depend on themselves only because they don't have trust.
Right. Okay, yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, it was amusing to hear Haley, who's not quite a teenager herself, trying to do her bit to improve the situation of teenagers who need adoptive and foster homes.
Well, and that fits well with another focus of our AMP program. We teach our youth to become advocates for themselves and others that are in the foster care system to improve their outcomes. So she's modeling that very well. Bless her heart.
Yeah, saying you should have teenagers, right, not babies.
That can take care of themselves.
Yeah. So. But on a more serious note, Roxanne, as you and I were interviewing these young people, it was striking to me how often the same concerns and anxieties surface. Like Haley, for example, kept saying, you can be there forever, family. Mm-hmm. You know, she's obviously so glad she's been adopted now. And another example would be the various comments about the necessity of changing schools because they were changing homes. And we'll hear an example of that in the next interview. When you think about it at all, it should be obvious, it should have been obvious to me, I suppose, that it would be anxiety provoking to change schools.
Right.
But these different interviews really brought it home to me because it kept coming up, right, often in casual ways.
Right. And if we think about the changes that these youth live through in their foster care experience, they're so life-changing. You know, and I always go back to what can we as community members do to make things better. You know, if we can help make that transition less stressful for a youth, be it her schoolmates welcoming a youth to a new school or welcoming them to our community, it certainly is very meaningful and comforting to the youth. And I'm sure it would feel very supportive to the foster parents, too.
Right, right. Now let's hear from a teenager. We'll hear the interview that you had with Abby. And Terry again, too.
Hello, this is Roxanne Thompson. I am interviewing Terry, who I think has been introduced earlier, and Abby now has joined us.
Hi.
Hi. Abby, do you want to tell us a little bit about your situation, please?
Yeah, I was removed from the home when I was 8 years old. I was with my biological mother living in North Carolina. She was doing drugs, so I was removed and put with a man who is believed to be my biological father and my stepmother. I was 13 and my dad got shot for dealing drugs and doing other things, so we were removed from the home again, and me and my three other siblings were put into a relative placement, and then they couldn't handle us, so we went to live with another relative. Then we were returned to our parents because they successfully completed drug treatment, and I was sent to go live in a group home because things just weren't working out and I was having behaviors. I was returned home, successfully discharged after a year and a half, and it still wasn't working, and now I live with a really great foster family.
Cool. Can you share a little bit with our listeners about how it felt when you were removed from your family?
It was for the best. In my situation, it was for the best.
And did you say you were with your siblings or?
Yes.
Okay. Until you went to group care.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it sounds like things in your situation worked out for the better. Not that it's ever easy to leave your birth families, but, and your foster parent happens to be Terry, who is with us today.
Yeah.
And we're so blessed that we have people like Terry that are willing to be there for our youth, right?
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to add, Terry? How long has Abby been in your home?
Abby has been with me for 2 months, and then we're pursuing guardianship. So she'll be officially ours, hopefully sometime this summer, and then she'll change schools.
Now, did you tell us what age you are now, Abby?
I'm 16, turning 17 in a month. Yeah, I'm a junior in high school.
It sounds like you're doing really well. Do you want to share some of the activities? She just told me last night or yesterday what she had to do.
I'm working on a play at our school right now. I'm the house manager. It's really cool, stressful, but fun. I'm doing stuff for an art show at Central Campus and...
Right, and lots of running back and forth.
Yeah.
So appreciate Terry. They decided that she would continue this year, and that makes sense. And that's, don't you live like 40 miles one way from school or something?
Yeah, so. It's a half an hour one
it's
way.
It's a half an hour one way.
Right. So, you know, you mentioned school. Since this is Foster Care Appreciation Month, is there anything that you would mention to youth that might be listening about the importance of welcoming a foster youth into a new school? You're going to go to a new school next year. So what will be important for you to make that a okay transition?
I don't know. Treat me like any other person.
Right. But do you think that always happens? I guess there's a reason I feel like I should ask that.
No.
Which is what? Reach out to you? Would you want folks to know that you were in foster, acknowledge it, or act like it never happened? Or
I don't know. I guess I'd be fine with it.
Okay. Just welcome you and not judge you. And,
yeah.
Oh, and I think you wanted to share something about openness of foster family.
Oh, yeah. I am blessed to live with Terry and her husband, and they have been nothing but good to me. My dad and my biological father and my stepmom aren't the most accepting of my lifestyle. And we need more foster parents, in my opinion, we need more foster parents who are LGBT affirming and understanding or can accept it.
Mm-hmm. And so Terry also trains foster parents and has been in the foster parent business. It's not a business, but lifestyle arena for, you know, most of her adulthood and has done an awesome job. But so there are some families that are not. What does it mean that a family needs to be affirming, or what would that look like in a youth's eyes?
You're accepting a new person into your family. So accept that they've had different experiences in life. They see things in a different way. So you're combining them with your family. So it's only respectful to look at it through their eyes. I kind of specialize in LGBT youth. I just really have a heart for it. I'd like to look at the world through their eyes. They're all about safety. And actually, foster care is really all about safety. Right. Having a youth in your home and having them safe. And a lot of conversation. I know even the small youth, you know, talk to them all the time, find out what they're thinking, how they're feeling. That's a huge part of making them feel comfortable in your home when you're a foster parent.
Right. And having to leave your birth family, whether it was for your best or not, has to be life-changing.
It does, definitely. And that's one of the things as foster parents, we work really hard to include their biological family, because the goal of foster care is always reunification. So it's very easy for me to talk with their biological family, keep them informed about school and things that they're doing. So if they're returning home, it's an easy transition. Even if they don't return home, it's really good to have that relationship, because you are taking care of someone else's
right.
child.
Right.
So you kind of share them.
Right.
And that's too hard for the youth to try to play favorites and loyalties right. and all that stuff. They shouldn't have to go through that. So I think of it as like one big happy family.
Right.
You know, they're
right.
just an extension of my family.
Right. And what about siblings? I know things have changed in the child welfare world so that they do try to place siblings together. But if that is not possible, is it important for siblings to still be involved and see each other?
Oh, definitely. I like to have, if there's a sibling group, it's really nice if I know the foster parent. So you can do things together. I mean, in the summer, you can swim, picnics, mm-hmm. all kinds of things. You know, even just go out to eat. A lot of times we'll share respite. So we'll have one sibling come for a weekend, and so they right. can see each other. Siblings are very close in foster care. Sometimes they're almost closer than their parents.
Right. They say that, you know, our sibling relationship is the longest in our lives, even longer than our parents. So, Abby, did you say, were you able to live with your siblings?
Yes, I was. When we were removed, all four of us together were removed, so
that's
we were together
good.
The whole time. Yeah.
Didn't always used to happen.
Yeah. And that's really important in my opinion.
Right. Abby, are there any requests or suggestions if a family is considering being a foster parent? What are some of the most important things for that family to offer a youth? I think Terry mentioned having an open ear and wanting to listen and talk. Can you think of anything else?
Get to know us for who we are. Being really supportive of whatever they want to do, whether it be a lawyer or a hot dog vendor,
mm-hmm.
just be supportive of what they want to do and help them to try to get there, like with college or school
right.
or a job.
And help you work through that process. I mean, Terry, I'm sure, is an awesome listener. You talk about the advantages and, you know, some of the difficulties, so that's important too. Can you think of anything that community members can do to make foster children feel welcome in the community?
Well, I know the Ames community is so helpful with foster youth. Through the AMP program, we have people that donate all kinds of things, snacks for our meeting. They donate items to make suitcases for the youth who are aging out, going to college or getting an apartment on their own. We have businesses here that offer our youth jobs. We have donations of clothing. I mean, it just goes on and on.
Terry, you mentioned AMP. Do you want to share a little bit more about that program?
The AMP program is a program of YSS. It's actually for youth ages 13 to 21, and it's for youth who are currently in foster care, aged out of foster care, or have been in any out-of-home placements. So if you've ever lived in group care, treatment, residential, shelter, anything like that, you're welcome at AMP. Even youth who are biological family members of a foster family are welcome, because they have their own perspective. They're sharing their home and their family with somebody.
That interview ends on another hot-button topic, the issue of blending families, and we'll be hearing more about that and other important concerns in the area of foster families later this month, when we hear the last interview that Roxanne and I recorded with the young people who've been living in foster care. And another hot-button topic that came up there was the issue of gay adolescents. And apparently this is one of the main reasons why adolescents are put into foster care, because their parents don't want them if they turn out to be gay or lesbian.
Yes. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've just been listening to an interview on the subject of living in foster care. May is National Foster Care Month, and we're so grateful to all of our guests today who are willing to speak out and also to work and give of themselves in this vitally important area in our community life. Now let's hear a last few words from Bambi Schrader, the recruitment supervisor for Iowa KidsNet.
May is National Foster Care Month, and we don't want people just to think about becoming a foster parent 1 month out of the year. But my challenge is for people, if you've ever thought about this, you thought, gosh, maybe I could do this, give Iowa KidsNet a call, because we need you to make the inquiry to see if this is something for you. The first step is to attend an information session. There's no obligation. You can just come and hear the message about the need, what the qualifications are, kind of what the licensing process would be. You go from there and you make the decision whether or not this is something you want to do or something you decide that it's not right for you. But make that call. Until you make that call, you don't know. So call Iowa KidsNet 1-800-243-0756, or you can go online at www.iowakidsnet.com. And Iowa KidsNet is IOWAKIDSNET.com. And you can do an inquiry either way. And again, you're just getting some information out there and making an informed decision if this is right for you and your family.
Right. That number again is 1-800-243-0756. That's it for Local Talk. We've been your hosts for today, Kay Puttock and Roxanne Thompson. We've been taking a look at May milestones, May being National Travel and Tourism Month and also National Foster Care Month.
Today we spoke with Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Allison told us how to be good ambassadors for Ames, which is rated as the best college town in America by livability.com. We also spoke with Bambi Schrader, the recruitment supervisor for Iowa KidsNet, an agency that recruits, trains, licenses, and supports foster and adoptive families. And we spoke with Terry Bailey, a foster parent and the assistant statewide coordinator for the AMP program. AMP stands for Achieving Maximum Potential, and it's a program within YSS. Last but certainly not least, we spoke with two young people who have resided in foster care.
Local Talk was engineered today by Rick Morrison. Our theme song is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org, or stop by the studio. We'd love to see you. If you've enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to the show and all our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. You can find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thanks, Ron.
KHOI is now streaming live online at khoifm.org, where you can also find archives of KHOI shows. Please remember that you, as our listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. And now that we've just finished our pledge drive, I want to offer special thanks to everyone who has made a new pledge. And thank you for listening today. We'll see you again on the radio.